So our next presenter is Dr. Sandra Winter from the Stanford Prevention Research Center at Stanford University, just down the peninsula from us.
That's right. So go Giants. It was a very exciting day in the city yesterday. I'm sure you saw lots of people wearing orange and black. It was really exciting. So thanks for a great presentation, Bill. I thought that was just so interesting and relevant to this session on the built environment and aging. And I'm going to talk to you about a little bit of work that we've been doing at the Stanford Prevention Research Center. So obviously we're in the heart of Silicon Valley, and so we've used some technology to try and help some of our older adults identify features of their built environment that impact their ability to live healthful lives, and that's what I'm going to be talking about. So before I get started, I have no relationships to disclose, and I do want to say that research always takes a small village to be conducted, and so these are the people that I have been working with primarily on this project. Abby King is the principal investigator, Matt Boomen, Jelana Sheets, Eric Heckler, Jen Arton, and Lauren Grieco. And then we also had some work done with us for us by some research assistants, Amy Wolf and Kate Youngman. So first of all, I'm going to describe the tool that our seniors use to audit their environment. I'm going to describe the seniors and tell you a little bit about them. I'm going to give you some examples of the photos and the audios that they collected using our assessment tool. And then I'm going to talk about the data coding and the inter-rater reliability, which is really the main part of my talk. And then tell you a little bit about the future goals that we have to use this tool. And then just remind you of the take-home points before I finish off. So first of all, to tell you a little bit about the tool, we had the Stanford Healthy Neighborhood Discovery Tool came out of a community advocacy project where we were trying to help residents from low-income areas identify features of their environment that impact their ability to be healthy. And while we were doing that, we did it with pen and paper and had the residents go around and take pictures using iPhones or disposable cameras and things like that. And we thought how cool it would be if we could actually put this on some type of technological device. And so what we've done is we've designed an app that is hosted on a 7-inch tablet. The reason we used a 7-inch tablet is because we did some user testing with the seniors. We had bigger tablets. We had smartphones. And they decided that the 7-inch one worked best for them. So the tablet gets put into a little plastic sleeve. The seniors wear it around their neck, and we tell them to go for a walk, their usual walk in their neighborhood that lasts about 30 minutes. So at the beginning, when we meet them, we generally schedule the appointments for about an hour. And at the beginning, we explain to them how to use the tool. So when we first tell seniors that we want them to use a tablet, they say, oh, no, they definitely couldn't do that. Far too complicated, far too technical. And it's a great feeling to be able to empower them and to show them how easy it is to use the tool. And it's really been one of the nicest parts about doing this study. So at first, the first screen has three little icons that they would click. They listen to an audio that explains to them the purpose of the tool, what to do and what to look for, and they do that using headphones. Then once they've figured out what it is that they have to do, then the next thing is we tell them to go for a walk, and this screen is very simple. They take a picture, and then they record their thoughts about the picture. And they can do this multiple times during their walk. And all of the pictures and the audios are geocoded, so we know where they are when they take gather this data. Then the next thing they can do is they can review their information, so they can decide whether they want to delete it or whether they're happy to share it with us as researchers. And then the last thing is that there's a 25-item question, which at the moment this module is built mainly around the built environment issues. So it asks about the quality of the sidewalks, litter, graffiti, loiterers, things like that. So the seniors take the tool and off they go. So this is one of our seniors using the tool. And we had in our pilot testing 27 seniors who were aged 65 to 89 years old. They are low-income individuals, and they live in affordable housing sites. So that's people who qualify for the HUD definition of affordable housing. And this was all done in different parts of San Mateo County here in California. Mostly women. Again, mostly non-Hispanic white. quite educated. This population group was fairly well educated. 42% used an assistive device, so that would be something like a scooter or a cane or a walking, a wheelchair, something like that. And as I said, this was a one-time, one-hour use that the seniors got to use the audit tool. So I'm going to show you now some photos, some examples of the photos that the seniors took using this tool. So first of all, neighborhood features that promote active living, nice gardens, parks and places with benches and to sit down, and then destinations. They liked it if there was a coffee shop or a library or something like that that they could go and visit. And then the neighborhood features that they identified as impeding active living were things like cracked and broken sidewalks, traffic, which meant that they couldn't cross the road comfortably or safely, and things like poles or trees or things like that being in the middle of the sidewalks, really difficult to get around if you're on a scooter. So now I want to show you an example of the audio, and it's a little bit difficult to see, but this is actually a picture of a crosswalk that one of our residents took, and I'm going to read the audio for you. He says, 2 weeks ago, I was struck by a car on this corner. One person has been killed, and several people have been hit at this particular corner. I think there should be a stop sign or some warning about pedestrians at this corner, and we have tried to do that with the city to no avail. And the thing that I want to share with you is that this man was actually in a wheelchair when he was hit by a car. So you can see tremendously powerful testimony from the from the people in the neighborhood about the things that are important to them. So we know that the seniors can gather this information. We know it's meaningful and powerful, but can this data that they gather be independently and reliably coded so that we identify key elements of the particular environment? And the reason why we would want to do this is because we would like to give this type of information to policymakers so that they can use the information that they get from the community to put that human face to help with them with the allocation of resources and to decide what's it's sort of like a consensus building tool among the community so that we can see what's important to them and not what's important to a researcher or a policymaker who may not even live in that particular environment. So when we did the coding, there were 116 different audio narratives, 126 photographs, and because some of the photographs or the narratives could have more than one particular element in it, there was 464 different elements that were coded all together. And we coded them into 19 different elements, and that was based on the literature, and it was also based on the information that the seniors gathered. And I'm going to give you examples of all of these later on. And again, it was to record facilitators or barriers to active living, and the coding was done by 8 minimally trained coders. So it wasn't a very complicated process at all. And we did this with some people at Arizona State University and some people at Stanford. And so we used a web-based coding form so that it could be accessed by people from different parts of the country. So now I'm going to tell you a little bit about the inter-rater reliability analysis. So first of all, the statistics that we used overall agreement, the percentage of times that the coders agreed that the picture or the audio was what it actually, or what they said it was. We also looked at the number of times they agreed that something was positively there. And as well, the number of times it was not there. So, for example, if the picture was about a sidewalk, how many times did somebody identify it, that it was a sidewalk, and how many times did they identify that if there was no sidewalk correctly, that there was no sidewalk? Then we also looked at the unadjusted Kappa, which is the statistic often used for inter-rater reliability. And then we also included a prevalence-adjusted, bias-adjusted Kappa, which is the payback. And the reason we did this is because many of the elements, there was no evidence of that particular feature. So there was no sidewalk in quite a few of the pictures. And so when you've got a high proportion of negative or skewness, where there's not an equal distribution between the item being there and not being there, then you have to take into account the prevalence, the number of times that the element was actually there. So we use the prevalence adjusted bias adjusted kappa. And we use the categorization that's been made popular by Landis and Koch since 1977, and that was 0 to 0.19 is poor, 0.2 to 0.39 is fair, 0.4 to 0.59 is moderate, 0.6 to 0.79 is substantial, 0.8 to 1 is almost perfect. So these are the inter-rater reliability results that we have. So you can see that for the audios, the agreement, the overall agreement, the positive agreement, the negative agreement, the kappa and the payback were all either almost perfect or substantial. There was nothing that was moderate, fair, or poor. And then for the photos, not quite as a higher inter-rater reliability. For the positive agreement and the kappa, the agreement was moderate, and for the other three, it was almost perfect. And I think that's because when somebody's telling you something, it's easier for you to understand what it is than when they take a photo. There could be many different reasons why somebody took the photo, and sometimes it's a bit more difficult to be able to pin that down. So these are the actual statistics for the prevalence-adjusted, bias-adjusted kappa. So the items that the agreement was almost perfect were barriers to active living, crime, crosswalks, parking, public transportation, road safety, traffic signs, street lighting, and traffic volume. We had substantial agreement in the areas of the feature being a facilitator of active living, the aesthetics, so how nice was the environment, amenities and destinations, mobility and disability issues, parks, playgrounds, personal safety and sidewalks. And then there was nothing in the moderate, fair or poor category. So the audios were almost perfect or substantial agreement for everything. And then regarding the photographs, we had almost perfect agreement for things including abandoned buildings, other people, construction, crosswalks, mobility, disability issues, parks and playgrounds, public transportation, homes, traffic signs, street features, trails and paths, litter and traffic volume. And then substantial agreement for the fact that the elements were barriers to active living, amenities and destinations and sidewalks, and then there was some moderate agreement for facilitators of active living and aesthetics, and nothing at all for fair or poor. So quite a high level of inter-rater reliability for the tool. So the next step that we're hoping to do in using this tool is we want to test this reliability in different settings. So we've already done some work in Arizona looking at a farmer's market there and assessing people's shopping experience at farmers markets. So farmers markets might be a place where people can get access to healthy nutrition. We're also interested in testing this in different population groups. So our initial sample were older adults, but we're expanding this to adolescents and to Latinos. So we're translating the tool into Spanish. And we're also thinking of doing this work in different regions. So in Arizona, as I said, at the farmers market, and we'd very much like to take this work to South and Central America, which is why we're testing it in the Latino population locally. We're also interested in different behaviors. So as I mentioned right now, the tool is being used primarily to look at the built environment, but we're also about to start work looking at food access. So people can take the tool and describe to researchers or to other policymakers how they access their food, why they make the choices they make, how they get to the store, what they buy, what motivates them, and they will be taking photographs and recording audio about this at this time. We're also interested in crowdsourcing the coding, so seeing if we can do something like Amazon Turk. I don't know if anybody knows what that is. I can tell you about it afterwards because I think I'm running out of time. And then maybe getting the users themselves to categorize the data instead of having independent coders do it. And then also, of course, we could do image and voice recognition technology. I don't know if anybody knows the Sense Cam. It's one of these photos, that a camera that you wear around your neck that takes pictures all of the time, and they have working on some automated recognition technologies for photos and voices. So that's also another possibility. So the take-home points is that the Stanford Healthy Neighborhood Discovery Tool can be used by tech-naive community members to gather meaningful and compelling data about neighborhood features that impact healthy living. And this helps to build community consensus about what is important, and that the data can be reliably and easily coded, and it can be then provided to decision makers to help engage them and allocate resources and funding. And that's Half Moon Bay, which is where I live. Thank you very much.